In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and I hope you are ready for today's Coolest Conversations podcast. Because shortly I'll be joined by Elliot Easton, former lead guitar player in The Cars, and current lead string bender in The Empty Hearts. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. The Empty Hearts have a new album on the way for a summer 2020 release, but out now is the new single, Remember Days Like These. It was chosen by Little Steven to be a coolest song in the world. Let's listen to some of that now, and then I'll be back to talk about it with Elliot Easton on today's Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I've done my best. I've done my time, done thinking of it all. Made my bed and I'm in it now, facing the present with you. 'Cause these are days to remember.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and dear listener, it's time now to have our coolest conversations, and my special guest is musician, guitarist, singer, and songwriter, Elliot Easton. Hi, Elliot, how are you?
Hey, Manfred, and hey, everybody out there listening to Underground Garage, of which I'm also a huge fan.
Well, thanks, man. We're a big fan of you and all your various projects. I know this week's coolest song of the world is Remember Days Like These, the new single from The Empty Hearts, and that features you alongside the likes of Wally Palmer from The Romantics, Andy Babiuk from The Chesterfield Kings, Clem Burke from Blondie, but playing drums on this new single on Remember Days Like These isn't Clem, it's Ringo Starr. So how did you get Ringo involved?
We asked him. You know, I would imagine that having Ringo play on your record might qualify it for the coolest song of the week, indeed. the way it worked out, well, I know Ringo, and Wally has done some of the Ringo All-Star tours.
That's right. Yeah.
So they're friendly, and the song had kind of like a sort of a laid-back kind of a feel to it that we thought Ringo, it wasn't so much that we even thought, hey, let's get a Beatle on the record. We just thought, you know what would feel great on this is Ringo, Ringo's drums. And it was perfect, you know, it's Ringo. We all we had to do in this digital age was send the files from Rochester at Andy Babiuk's, where we record, to Los Angeles, and his assistant set it up with his drums, and he just, I wasn't there, I imagine, just put some headphones on and just cut it, and it sounds terrific. Wow. Like Ringo.
So,
and it just instantly gave it that feel, you know what I mean? Yeah. It just, the track was already recorded, yet somehow it sounds like he's like guiding it, you know?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I mentioned Clem being in the band, so how did that sit with Clem? He didn't mind sharing the throne?
Oh, no. I mean, we all love them, and we love, you know, the Beatles are just like everything to us. So it's like, you know, I don't think he minded very much. I think he was glad, you know. We're not, you know, it's not a big ego trip band. We have the whole basis of this band when we formed it, when Andy Babiuk called and, you know, around and was talking to me about it, he said, I want to put a band together that reminds us of why we wanted to play music in the first place.
Yeah.
And, you know, and with that in mind, so we just kind of like draw on all our favorite influences and all the stuff we really love. So you know, having Ringo on there was fine, I think, with all four of us. It wasn't like any kind of like Clem feeling like slight or anything. He played a fine drum track. It was just for fun, you know. It was just something cool to do.
Absolutely. Well, he still is represented on there. I hear a tambourine on there. That's Clem, right?
Oh, there you go. Yeah. He's probably on 16 other songs, too.
Right. Well, I want to ask you about the composition, because my notes say it was a group effort to write the song. How did you guys come up with it?
You know, it's always different. You know, I'm sure every time you ask someone to write songs, they give you that kind of answer. You know, I don't write songs. They just come in through my antennas. What happened, I think, in that case, and usually happens when you get together with a bunch of people and write, is somebody probably had an initial like germ of an idea, maybe a few chords or an idea for a chorus or something. And we, you know, it's just like you just sit around with acoustic guitars and how about if it goes here, you know, or something like, and you just kick it around until, you know, everybody likes it and happy with it and thinks it's cool. You know, it's just kind of that kind of organic process. That's like really sort of creating anything from nothing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like you look at a blank piece of paper and like, you know, what do I write? You know, it's the same thing. It's just, well, you got to do something. So you just jump in and see where it goes.
Well, the single will be on the new album that's due out this summer on Wicked Cool Records. And I wanted to ask you when and where you recorded the track. I think you mentioned something about doing it at Andy's, or maybe that's where you were working up the number initially. But is that where you recorded, in Rochester at Andy's?
It is. Andy has a fantastic facility up there. In fact, a whole complex. First, he has the coolest guitar shop that I've ever seen. It's called Andy Babuk's Fab Gear, which should tell you all you need to know about his guitar shop. You know, it's just the coolest stuff, Rickenbacker 12 strings and Hofner Beetle basses and Fenders and, you know, great guitars. And he has this complex where he has his studio and a big open room, and in the small rooms where they have like kind of a rock school where they give lessons and they put bands of young people together and they play. It's really wonderful. And then he has the big room, which is like his studio and where he keeps all his like amazing gear that he has, because he has everything. Any guitar, keyboard, or drum you could ever want, or Vox amp, or, you know, just all the coolest stuff. So, you know, and he owns it, so we just go there and we record without having a clock ticking, you know. And then our producer, Ed Stasium, takes them back with him to California and mixes them.
I want to ask you about Ed in a second, but since you mentioned Andy's a shop and all the gear that he has, was there anything you got to play on or through on this particular track, on Remember Days Like These, that you'd always wanted to do and never had the opportunity to before, but now because Andy's stuff was there, you could, oh yeah, I can try this out?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, he had mellotrons and clavulines, like from Baby or Rich Man, that weird sound, and,
yeah,
and sitars, tambora, literally anything you could think of, a string, percussion, amp, guitar, he has it. So, we, you know, Hammond organs, Wurlitzer, pianos, you know, without getting technical, but he has, like, all the classic sounds. And so it's like Disneyland for us. Let's try this. Oh, yeah, that sounded great on, like, Revolver, you know?
Right.
It's fantastic, you know, it's just awesome.
So did you play one of his guitars on the track?
Well, no, I'm left-handed, so I always have to bring my own stuff as far as guitars. I can't play a right-handed guitar. Mine are like mirror image. You know, because I had to go from California to Rochester, I didn't bring a lot of guitars, but if there's some guitar nerds out there that want to know what I've used, I brought a Les Paul, a Blackguard Fender Telecaster, a Rickenbacker 12-string, the Roger McGuinn model, limited edition, and a Gibson Hummingbird acoustic, I believe, was
Before
I brought. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Ed Stasium, and I know he recorded and produced your first album, the 2014 self-titled full-length. So he did the new one as well. Did he work with any of you guys before, with any of your earlier bands?
Well, I did. I played, the first time I worked with Ed, he was producing at the Car Studio in Boston, Synchro Sound, Peter Wolf's first solo album, Lights Out, and I was invited to play guitar on that, it was our own clubhouse, but I came and played guitar, and also did Saturday Night Live with Pete, and Eddie produced that one. And of course, you know, everyone knows he did the Ramones records and all these cool records, a lot of great records. But I'm not sure, but I would imagine being in Blondie and involved in the New York scene that Clem might have worked with Ed on something, you know.
Yeah.
But we've all been friends with him for years.
Well, we know the album gets released, the new album gets released in summer, but with a single out now, do you guys have any shows lined up anytime soon?
Well, it's all coming together right now. The album comes out in August, and we're gearing up now to putting the show together and booking shows. And yes, the intention is to play a lot. We want to get out there and play a bunch.
So maybe in the fall?
You know, the way it works is we work like within the windows of when Blondie isn't on the road and the Romantics. And so we're working out now, like when our availabilities are and trying to book the shows and sort all that kind of schedule and stuff out. So I'm not precisely sure, but summer into the fall and even into the winter.
Cool. So I saw online that you were born in Brooklyn and that you had studied at the Berklee College of Music. So were you raised in Brooklyn or where did you grow up?
Well, I wasn't. I was born in Brooklyn. I only lived there till I was three. My mom was a Juilliard-trained singer, so I got the music from her. And so after three, we lived in Forest Hills, Queens for 3 years. My dad owned beauty salons. That's what he did for a living. And he used to do Mrs. Weinstein's hair, who was Leslie West's mother. And and Waddy Wachtel and Leslie West grew up together. And years ago, I was talking to Leslie, we figured out my father used to do his mother's hair. And we talked. I was talking to Waddy about it. I was like flipping out, like how close it was. I mean, if I had not moved from Queens out to Long Island to Massapequa, where I grew up, I probably would have grown up with those guys, like the Ramones and stuff, because they were all like within the same block as me.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you were born in 53, so you must have been about 11 when the Beatles performed on Ed Sullivan for the first time. Did you happen to watch that?
Oh, I happened to watch it. I just happened to watch it. I was 10. My birthday's in December 53, so I just turned 10 in February of 64, a couple of months before. And you know what, Manfred? I couldn't even sleep that night. I watched that show sitting on the floor in the living room like millions of other families, you know, kids sitting on the floor with the black and white TV. And it hit me so hard that, like, when I went to bed that night, I was, like, vibrating. Like, it hit like a lightning bolt. I tossed and turned all night. I felt like I just experienced something that was going to affect me for the rest of my life, which certainly it did, and showed me and other people how to live, really. I mean, like, how to be in a band and what to do. I just couldn't overstate it, man. It was everything, you know? Like, the world began. You know, it's like the scene in The Wizard of Oz when she opens the door and it goes from black and white to Technicolor. The 60s began.
So the next day, you wake up, well, you didn't sleep much, but did you announce to your parents, I need a guitar?
Oh, it wasn't even necessary. That's how galvanizing the whole thing was. I'll tell you, that Monday morning, I got on the school bus to go to school. And you know how school buses are back then. Kids are mean, and there's bullies, and people won't let you sit on the bench with them, and this and that, and all that kind of hierarchy of silly school bus crap. That Monday morning, the entire bus was unified and singing, I Want to Hold Your Hand Together.
Wow.
The whole bus. I get almost like weepy thinking of it. I mean, these are guys who would like beat you up the day before. Everybody was singing, I Want to Hold Your Hand. So,
wow.
I mean, where do you find that? It's impossible to describe to a second, third, or fourth generation Beatles fan what it was actually like to be, say, in New York when the Beatles arrived and what what that felt like, you know, to be in the moment of when it was all happening, and with each new record coming out at, you know, and getting it when it, you know, when it was brand new. We were really lucky. That's all I can say. We're just so lucky.
So you mentioned your mom having studied Juilliard and sort of.
Yeah.
So when did you start playing guitar? And was guitar your first instrument?
It was. I started when I was 3 in Brooklyn in 56. I saw Elvis Presley on television, and also the Cowboys all played guitars, like Roy Rogers and stuff. Right. But when I saw Elvis on TV, and it's one of those stories that families love to tell, like goes into the family story they always tell. But my mother always said that after I saw Elvis on TV, and it was probably like Steve Allen or something before Sullivan, I got a glass of water and a comb and my Mickey Mouse guitar, and had my mother comb my hair like in a duck's ass in the back, like, you know, spit curl in the front, and I'm checking myself out in the mirror with a guitar. I'm like, you know, a rocker at 3.
Wow.
But yeah, that's, you know, that's how far back it goes. I kind of like was born just in time for rock and roll.
Absolutely. Well, I've read that before the Cars, you played with Rick Ocasek and Benjamin Orr in a group called Cap'n Swing. Were you in any other bands before you hooked up with those guys?
Nothing notable. I played, you know, like most of us in high school bands and all that. And I played in a band. I went to college a year before I went to college at Berkeley, and I played one of the state universities in New York, upstate, and played all over New York, and then got to Boston. And before the Cars and Cap'n Swing, and I met all those guys, I was just doing all kinds of gigs, just basically because I liked living in Boston and didn't want to move back to my parents in Long Island. But I was playing country music from 8 to 2 in the morning, 40 minutes on, 20 minutes off, in the area that they used to call in Boston the Combat Zone, which was like their 42nd Street, Times Square, where all the sleazy stuff was.
Right.
And they had little, you know, clubs and bars and joints. And I guess I was 18 or 19, and I was playing, you know, country music six sets a night.
Mocking
so
the
that
show.
Was good training. I guess you call it for $25 a night, you know, for 6 sets, $25. And that's, I guess, called paying your dues. I don't know.
That's right.
I was so poor that my roommates and I, we were collecting food stamps, and we really worked for it, you know. I mean, we paid our dues and never had any assurance that anything really would come of it, but just loved what I was doing. And people say, well, what would you do if like the Cars didn't make, or if, you know, wasn't a big band selling records? And I always say to them, I'd be playing at the corner bar every week, because that's just what I love to do. Whether it was a big band or not or whatever, I still would just be playing music.
Was the last time you played with Rick Ocasek when the Cars were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 2018?
Yes, it was. And it was a very nice week for all of us. We hadn't seen each other in quite a while. And, you know, Ben was gone, and it was just the four of us then. And you had to become a band again. We hadn't played together in so long. So we spent a week rehearsing and hanging out together. And there was a lot of good stuff happened. You know, bands are like families. Or dysfunctional families, or however, but they're families, and so it was a good opportunity to like talk about some stuff and maybe do some healing and stuff. And I'd like been in pretty close contact with Rick since the Hall of Fame, and I'm just really, really glad about that, because I'm just grateful that he didn't leave us. And I had to think to myself, I wish I could have spoken to him one more time. There's something I would have really liked to say, you know. And we had that chance, so that was, I'm really grateful for that. It hit me hard, man. It hit me hard.
I was going to ask really you about did. That. I was certainly stunned by, well, you know, on my end, just the apparent suddenness of his passing last year. And
you know, I didn't even know It just was such a blindside. I got a call, Rick's gone. What? Because he didn't have any sort of illness that anyone knew of as life-threatening or anything. And it just came as such a shock. And, of course, I had no idea how it would hit me. How could you? But it hit me really hard. And, I mean, he was like my big brother. He was 9 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And I really looked up to him, and also just beyond that, the five of us in the cars or any band that's successful, you know, you can't go through what we did and do all the things we did and not have a really, really special bond.
Yeah.
Because we realized our childhood dreams together, and we saw the top of the mountain together. And you can't do that and not have a special connection. You know, so it's a precious thing. It's a pretty cool thing.
You mentioned paying your dues and playing country music, and I know that outside of the Cars, over the years, we've played with all sorts of folks, including, let's see, Amy Rigby and Lee Rocker and Jules Shear. And in Creedence Clearwater Revisited, you were like in the group for almost 10 years, so you were like a huge CCR fan?
Oh, yeah. I loved Creedence. In high school, I played Creedence songs. Yeah, loved them. The funny thing is, Manfred, about me is that if people only know me from being in the Cars, they wouldn't know really all about, like, my influences or what I'm into, because I'm really, like, far more into sort of American roots music and stuff like that than what might be suggested by the Cars music, like, say, Roxy music or Velvet Underground or things like that. That was never my scene. I was like, you know, I'm into, like, the band, you know what I mean? And, you know, I was like a Newport Folk Festival kid, Mississippi John Hurt. Not the kind of stuff that you would expect from the guitar player from the Cars. And I think that that combination of very different influences from each member of the band created this unique recipe, if you will, that kind of made the band what it is. Like, it was nothing sort of that you could calculate, but that's just how the five of us sounded playing in a room together with all our differing influences. And that's how it came out.
And I wanted to ask you now, focus again here for a moment on The Empty Hearts, because, sure, let's see, the B-side to Remember Days Like These is a track, Tell Me Reasons Why. You recorded that the same time as the rest of the new album?
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we all recorded at the same time.
All the same time. So with this one...
Well, no, I lie. We recorded all the basic tracks at the same time, and then Clem left. I think he had some shows with Blondie. And then we came back a short while later and did overdubs on guitars, parts, and things like that.
Oh, that's close enough to being, you know, at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, of course, yeah.
Well, so with the so thinking of this track, Tell Me Reasons Why, any of the guys going through, like, a rough patch now, or were you drawing on prior relationships with this one?
Oh, I guess Wally wrote the lyrics. I, to be honest, I never asked him, like, what the inspiration was for him. But, like, you know, you write what's going on in your life or what you know. So I think, you know, if there's some inference to be drawn, it's as valid as anything else. You know, I mean, and that's the thing about songwriters too. They always say, well, you know, it means something to me, but if it means something different to you, that's just as valid. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
But as far as specifics, like going through something, I'm not sure.
But similarly to Remember Days Like These, you guys kind of got together and sort of bounced off some riffs, and Wally contributed the lyrics, and that's sort of how the song came together?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, that's kind of how we work. You know, Wally's got to sing them. He's our singer and has to be comfortable with it. So he works with that a lot, with the lyric part and melodies, and, you know, we all work on it together. And whoever has the best idea, that's what gets used. There's nothing precious about it. You know, we just try to make it good.
Well, Elliot, thanks so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Well, thank you, Manfred. I really appreciate it, and really excited about having this record come out with Ringo playing on it.
Absolutely. Well, right now, though, we're going to give that B-side a spin. Here's Tell Me Reasons Why from The Empty Hearts in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I'm getting used to living here without you. I wonder why I'm even here at all. The less we talk, things don't get much better. So tell me reasons why.
Tell Me Reasons Why. That's The Empty Hearts here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. B-side to their new single, Remember Days Like These, and out on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Elliot Easton, their lead guitar player, for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Make sure you catch it next time around when I'll check in with Alexander Spencer from New York City's Wildlife. They've got a new single out. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.